Do you wish to comment on these recommendations?
Chair Yee, members of the committee, I think that we're in agreement with the fiscal analyst recommendations. We, of course, would just want you to recognize that if those employment hearing costs go higher or it causes us problems in the future, that we would probably request an emergency board appearance. But that would be the only figure that we see that we would have trouble with in that particular bill. So we would be in agreement with Ms. Archer's recommendation.
And AFS is okay on the recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Representative Henneman.
So we intend then to specifically offer an invitation to the board?
Madam Chair, I don't think it would be. I think that if they have a problem, they'll return to the e-board,
okay.
and an invitation might be an invitation to have a problem.
No invitation.
No invitation.
No invitation. Take the day off.
An acknowledgement of probability or potentiality.
Yeah. There may be a rebuttable presumption.
Madam Chair, I'll move House Bill 2454 to the full committee with the best recommendation.
There's no amendment, is there?
This would be the B engrossed.
The B engrossed.
Correct.
Senator Hamby moves to send House Bill 2454 B engrossed to the full committee with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? If there's no discussion, we are going to call the roll. All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, say no.
Representative Hanlon?
Aye.
Representative Stoa?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Yee?
Aye. Motion is carried. Senator Hamby, will you carry this bill? And Representative Henneman.
Okay.
2454. Now we are going to have hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2455.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, House Bill 2455 was also mentioned during the budget hearings. This is a bill that deals again with compliance with federal regulations, and particular with review of existing support orders. The Department of Justice currently is funded not quite 100%, I believe it's 95% in a pilot project to determine what these reviews will be like. And at the end of that project, which will be in the fall of 1990, then it will be the state's responsibility to pick up the costs for those reviews. And this bill deals with that. And Ms. Seelock is here to discuss that.
Chair Ms. Seelock.
Members of the committee, thank you. I'm Colleen Seelock, Administrator for the Support Enforcement Division, Department of Justice. There's really not a lot I can add to Ms. Archer's presentation. We currently do have a federal grant. We were the first in the nation to receive one. There are now currently, I believe, three or four other states in the nation that are attempting to duplicate our pilot project. That grant incorporates actually seven full-time employees. Our request is for eight. We are only doing this project in approximately eight Oregon counties. And as we anticipate going statewide with it at the end of the grant period, this request would ask for an additional attorney, because many of these reviews must take place in the circuit court, or the court that actually issued the original support order. It's pretty straightforward. It's for two attorneys, one PEA position, three what we call support enforcement agents, and two clerical specialists, for a total of eight positions. And it would be just for the remainder of that biennium, beginning October 1st, 1990 through June 30th, 1991.
Now, this is to evaluate methods of reviewing and modifying large volumes of support orders.
Mm-hmm. Chair Yee, if I might explain that. Currently, the two-year grant that was awarded by the federal government and the match rate of 95%, it is under the Family Support Act, or sometimes people refer to welfare reform that was passed last October, a compliance issue whereby the child support programs across the nation must review every child support order every 3 years to match it to guidelines that are being established in every state that create the initial order amount. There is no state in the nation that we're aware of that does this on a routine basis, primarily because it takes a lot of staff time, and because child support, although it certainly has been around for over 100 years, there's so much more emphasis on it today that we're suddenly realizing that with a regular review, those ordered amounts should rise as the children get older and as the income or resources of the parents grow as they become more experienced workers. So they are anticipating that what will happen is as the orders go up, people who are on public assistance will go down. And in fact, that we believe will happen. Our project is so new, I can't bring you any specific numbers this morning. Mm-hmm. It takes a while to get this kind of routine and review set up. And so we've really only been actually looking at orders for about the last 3 months, and we just don't have enough to share with you. But the purpose of the pilot project is to give back to the federal government those results. And of course, I think you're probably all aware, anytime you receive a federal grant, the amount of forms and statistics that you must gather and data that you must gather is just unbelievable. So they will have a very good handle on Oregon, as we will, about whether this is in fact happening. As the orders go up, the public assistance welfare grants go down. So that's the purpose of the pilot, is to give the feedback to the federal government to make sure that they did what they thought was the right position and that this thinking holds true. Then, of course, what this bill does is just continue that routine review as the federal government has requested. So the pilot project that is in place is exactly for that, is to feed that information back to the federal government, as we hope or as we anticipate that public assistance grants will go down.
Any questions? Senator Hamby.
Colleen, now you have 7. Is that it?
That's correct.
Limited duration covering 8 counties, uh-huh. No doubt the most populous counties.
It's really a spattering. It was a scientific, what we had to do was set
sampling.
Up. Yeah, a
uh-huh.
sampling. And so it covers Marion, Lane, Lynn, Clackamas, and so it's a variety of counties. Lincoln County is covered mm-hmm. as a more rural county. And we may expand that, and part of the reason for expansion is because we have to have a certain kind of case and a certain number of them, and so we will be monitoring if we're getting those from those counties, and it may expand, but obviously to go to 36 counties mm-hmm. From the far eastern border to mm-hmm. the coast will require an additional attorney to be able to make those required court appearances. But we believe honestly that the support staff will be able to cover it. That all we really will need is that additional attorney.
Do you get at least a sense that the hypothesis is correct?
Well,
or even though you may not have the stats to show
Senator
it,
Senator Hamby, it's real interesting right now, to be quite candid with you. We have two different kinds of cases, of course, that we're reviewing. One is where the person is currently on public assistance.
Mm-hmm.
We, as the state, then can determine whether or not we're going to move forward, and obviously we do. Every time we get information back that shows that this order should go up, then mm-hmm. we act on that. The other kind of case that we service is those people who are off welfare and or may never have been on welfare. And we're contacting those obligees in most situations, the women in the household. Many of them are, and they have a choice whether or not to pursue a modification upward. And we're finding that many of them are suggesting that they're not interested in pursuing it. And so we're in to a lot of research right now, including questionnaires and calling them with respect to why they're saying no. Some of them are saying no because it was such an emotional trauma going through the divorce, and there's so much anger and hatred between those ex-spouses now that they don't want to ever see that ex-spouse again, nor do they want to go through the misery of going through a court hearing, even if it puts more dollars in their pockets. So that's kind of interesting, but again, we have such a small sample, we're mm-hmm. not prepared at all to make any prediction that this will hold true.
Mm-hmm.
We were predicting that the average order statewide would go up somewhere around $100. We also will do the reverse. We will also lower the amount if, in fact, the financial income has changed. Out of the first few cases we're seeing, that amount is probably somewhere between $50 and $70. But again, it is such a low number, we're not willing at this point to make a change. We should have a much better data basis, I would suggest, in probably about January.
Representative Hanneman, are you
finished?
Yes.
If I have it correct here, Oregon's in the pilot project now, which is 95% federally funded. Do the feds pull out after September 1990?
That's correct. They don't pull completely out, Representative Hanneman.
To what percent of the contribution do they pull out?
They go from that 95% funding to our normal child support matching ratio, which is 66%. So it isn't like Oregon must pick up the entire bill, because Oregon does not pick up the entire bill for any component of the child support program.
How many states joined the pilot project program?
Well, we were actually sought after, and they encouraged us to make, because of the automation systems and because of Oregon's reputation in child support. So we were given our grant last October. Then they also recruited or advertised for another four states. Their pilot projects have not yet even been awarded. All the states have been selected to do it. And there's three or four, I'm not quite sure how many.
We're the only one
currently doing it, but there should be three or four within the next 30 days.
When does the federal act say that all states have to comply to the provisions?
All states must have a comprehensive plan by 1990. And then they must have a fully implemented program by 1993. They must be doing this regularly, routine review by 1993 or suffer the penalties.
Do the other four states get their 95% coming in also?
They will get it for a 24-month period. So
Like we did. And then when eventually the goal is for all 50 states at 66%. 66 and
exactly.
Percent.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't increase the percent when they passed the act.
What they did was, because they knew this was going to have major repercussions for every child support program, they wanted to gather some data first.
Mm-hmm.
Because they put in every 3 years, they're not sure whether 2 years should be more appropriate or 5 years should be more appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
They knew no state under the current federal scheme of financing at 66% would be interested in even attempting this project. And so, of course, what they did was say, we'll fund it at 95%, and then you'll be able to use that information in developing your own plan. So in many respects, from our perspective, Oregon has really gotten a bargain, because not only is the federal government funding at 95%, but it produces more collections, and it produces more income, it produces more revenue that is fed back through other funds in the adult and family services revenue, as well as in the children's services division revenue. And so we, in fact, are really money ahead. And so we felt very pleased that we were, in fact, awarded the grant.
I didn't know anything about that.
I remember something during the budget.
Senator Hamback.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. I recall some information during the budget hearings.
So this pilot project is not to strengthen the enforcement. The idea is to review these child support cases, mm-hmm. and to see if we can adjust the child support amount to be more corresponding to the economic circumstances of the parents and to any changes.
That's
same
correct.
As the last determination.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But once you have a recommendation to increase or decrease, do you have to go through the court to change the order?
The obligor has the same opportunity that he currently has when initiating that order. He can agree And then, of course, we just go ahead and file the papers. He can ask for a hearing. If that order was established through an administrative hearings process, then we would go back to the Employment Division and ask for a review there. If that order was originally taken and set in court, then we must go back to the circuit court. We must go back to the court where the order originated.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it depends on how the first order was determined.
Correct, mm-hmm. correct. And it depends on whether the obligor is in agreement. If they're in agreement, then we just enter the order, and we have had some of those already. And if they are opposed, then of course we would go through a full judicial process.
I don't want to bring up a subject that will lengthen the discussion, but I hear so often from parents, say the fathers of support the dependent children, they always complain that we don't get visitation rights and we still have to pay. I mean, is this something you're going to include in all the factors you're going to consider when you decide on the child support amount? A lot of times they say, well, the child is living with my mother. Why should I continue to pay child support? Or they can tell me, we never get any visitation right, and why should we pay support for the children? Well, I think it's important to continue to support the children, but at the same time, do you take these factors into consideration in your pilot project?
Senator Yee, you probably have just asked or posed the question that every child support worker hears every day, and I'm sure you all hear from all of your constituents. The federal government is very clear that we do not at all review visitation,
mm-hmm.
that our function is for the collection of child support, and not
mm-hmm.
only to hope that it goes directly to the children, and hopefully they can stay off of public assistance, or to reimburse the states where public assistance is being paid out. If there's a visitation problem, the appropriate place to handle that is in the circuit court where their divorce decree took place. Unfortunately, divorces affect us all emotionally, and what happens quite often is the children become pawns in anger and frustration that the parents have. So sometimes people withhold visitation because they're angry about something that occurred in the divorce. I wish that weren't true. I wish that wasn't the way the average person thinks. I also agree with exactly your position, Senator Yee. Irrespective of visitation issues, those children have a right to be maintained as if that family was still intact. And that's our responsibility, is to try to ensure that the financial end of it is taken care of. But there is nothing in these bills, nor in our role anywhere in our own Oregon statutes or in the federal scheme, that would allow us to enter in and intercede in the visitation issues. They really do try to keep that separate, and that those issues must be dealt with in the circuit court that issued the divorce decree. And the public doesn't oftentimes like to hear that, but unfortunately we are limited by our own statutes as well as the federal statutes.
So you don't consider those factors?
We do not consider visitation at all. The one caveat I would add to that, unless the child is actually living for extended periods of time with the others, the obligor. Now, if, for example, it's a 6 month here and 6 month there, or if there's the child spends 3 months in the summer, we do consider those factors where the economic impact changes. But we will not intercede when, in most instances, what the call you will get from the father is, I don't get to see my kids, I'm not going to pay my support anymore until I can see them. We will not, that is not an acceptable excuse. We will still proceed at collecting support. And he must then go to the circuit courts for remedy about that.
Mm-hmm. Do we have other questions for Ms. Seelock? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Peggy, do you want to give us the fiscal impact and your recommendation?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the fiscal impact, again, on this bill is with AFS and Department of Justice. The general fund impact, $137,605 to AFS, and with a federal funds limitation of $267,117. And then the sum of those two being $404,722 in other funds, effect on the Department of Justice Support Enforcement Division. The Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation on this bill is similar to the one before, with the exception that we'd recommend that the $137,605 be reserved in the emergency fund for the department to return to the emergency board at the end of the pilot project, report on findings that they will be reporting to the federal government, and request, if appropriate, on the basis of the pilot project, the appropriation or the release from the emergency fund of the $137,605, which would go to AFS in that amount or something less if it came to a lesser figure. The way this would allow the passage of the bill in order to comply with the federal regulations when they become the state's responsibility, and yet would not require at this time any kind of budget adjustment in anybody's budget. And we would simply put a sheet in the emergency board. The committee would make the recommendation. There would be a note put in the emergency board bill file that this was an amount of money that the committee was recommending be placed in the emergency fund.
So, Peggy, the $137,605 is an amount they don't need until October 1, 1989.
At the end of
1990. The pilot. Mm-hmm. Oh, at the end of the pilot project.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Then, do we need to provide for the 5% general fund for the pilot project?
No, ma'am. That's in there. That's ongoing
already.
Project. That grant, that's in their base budget. The grant was awarded during the last interim at an emergency. They got their expenditure limitation increases during the emergency.
That's already in their budget.
That's already in their budget.
Mm-hmm. So all we need to do is provide for that in the e-board appropriation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't require any amendment to the bill as it is now. The bill could go forward and it's be engrossed.
Madam Chair, I will move House Bill 2455 be engrossed to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Henley moves to send House Bill 2455 be engrossed to the full committee with due pass recommendation. Any discussion? If there is no discussion, the committee assistant will call the roll on the motion to pass House Bill 2455.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, I was just wondering if you wanted to include in the motion
e-board. Yes, with the 137,000 figure set aside for the e-board for the close of the project.
The bill includes appropriation, general fund appropriation of $137,605 general fund in the e-board appropriation.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the motion I believe would be that the bill go forward in its be engrossed version with a recommendation that the 137 be placed in the e-board.
Mm-hmm. You all heard the motion. And all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say no. Clerk will call the roll.
Hanneman?
Aye.
Representative Saw?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Yee?
Aye. Motion's carried. Chair will carry House Bill 2455 to the committee and on the Senate side. And Representative Sola will carry this on the House side. Do we have anything else to come in front of the committee today? Meeting is adjourned. Ways and Means General Government Subcommittee will come to order. We are going to hear House Bill 2338 this morning, and we're going to start off by asking Ken Jones to give us an overview. I have two people who have signed up on the witness sheet, Mr. Richard Munn and Gil Riedel, Association of Counties. Are there anyone else who wish to sign up on the sign-up sheet? Or are you the main coordinator, Gil?
Actually, Madam Chair, Richard has intended to give the opening comments, I guess, once we get testimony. He's due here in a moment.
Okay, we'll start off with the overview from Ken.
Well, Madam Chair, House Bill 2338 is a major county assessor funding bill, and the bill itself comes to you from the Revenue and School Finance Subcommittee. It has basically two funding mechanisms in it. It increases the delinquent tax interest rate and also adds a recording fee. Where there are some sunset dates and other provisions in it, there is a budget proposal for the Department of Revenue's share of this program, and I believe that this program will add to the department's current takeover of industrial appraisal properties, the department currently having responsibility for specified properties in excess of $5 million of value. And this bill, as we last looked at it, would reduce the value of those properties. In other words, expand the number of properties down to the 1 million plus value of properties. This morning, because we're trying to get as many bills scheduled through the committees as we can, and we're trying to get these scheduled early, hold public hearing on them, perhaps hold over for a day or so for work session while we take a look at the budget proposal and match that with the revenue estimates put together by both all three parties, the agency, the Department of Revenue, and the Revenue and School Finance Subcommittee, to perhaps go ahead and place the county witnesses in front of Mr. Munn's testimony, let them speak from excerpts of wherever their interest might lie, and then ask Mr. Munn to pull all those loose ends together. If that would be the pleasure of the committee, that would be our recommendation to you.
Okay. We have a county witness from Mr. Riedel. How do you pronounce your last name?
It's you did an excellent job, Madam Chair.
Riedel?
Riedel.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr. Riedel. Anyone else is going to sign up as witness? You know, in my mail, I have a couple of opposing letters. I think those people who oppose need to come and testify, too. Have they been notified? In my file, there's one from Douglas County. Have all the county assessors been notified about the hearing?
Madam Chair, about this particular hearing, I'm not sure, but the county assessors are well aware of this bill, the existence of this bill, and the progress of the bill. Their own organization is well on top of it. It's their major piece of legislation this session.
Do you think somebody can contact the Douglas County assessor who has written twice opposing this bill?
Madam Chair, if I could suggest, perhaps you'd like to make those letters simply
available,
a record for the committee, and make copies of it available to the subcommittee.
Mm-hmm. But however, they ought to be notified about the opportunity to testify.
Madam Chair, we have a couple of assessors' representatives in the audience if you wish to your comment from that group, which could incorporate probably some of the points raised by the Douglas County assessor.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'd be more familiar with her position than I would.
Mm-hmm. Because we need to hear both sides. I look at the vote of passage from the House side. It was 24-36. So we need to hear both sides when we're having a hearing. So we appreciate somebody can notify them.
Okay, fine, Madam Chair.
Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. For the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I understand that you've been well briefed about the problem that this bill attempts to address, the inequities in the system. The 26 of the 36 counties are out of compliance with the state statutory requirement that.
How many counties are out of compliance?
26.
26? In your letter here says 22, 10 and 12.
I believe 26 is the accurate number. the problem is not has not been one of lack of will, but lack of means. Counties have recently lost $50 million a biennium in lost federal general revenue sharing and redirected interest on unsegregated taxes, and the disruption caused by the recession, which you're very familiar with. This required across-the-board cutbacks of staff, including those in the assessor's offices. We now are in a position where the staffs are more efficient, and the numbers have grown a little bit, but counties are still well short of resources to return to and maintain compliance. Probably the main problem in terms of counties' revenue stability is just that, lack of stability. Some of the counties rely on timber receipts. Others have outdated tax bases. The beauty of this bill before you now is that it provides stability in revenue, in addition to increasing compliance enforcement where necessary, and improving management where that has been lacking at times. The House bill that you have is a product of extensive study, working group, which included several different interests from the school boards, the cities, the teachers union, AOI, realtors, home builders, all have been involved. The House Revenue Committee did extensive work, and Senate Revenue also did some intensive study. The result is
Bill, has Senate Revenue heard this bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, and passed it out six to nothing.
Oh, so it went from the House Revenue to the House floor to the Senate Revenue Committee and then to here.
That's right. The bill can be described as a delicate balance of interests. It addresses a problem that is of the highest priority to AOC and of strong interest to other local taxing districts and to the private sector. You have before you a summary, a two-page summary of the bill, and I could summarize that for you. It's on AOC letterhead, and I could quickly step through that and stop me if I've been unclear or confused you. The bill provides a couple of things, and this summary will not get into the detail. The bill is fairly complex and a new program. In terms of new revenue, what it does is increase the interest rate on delinquent property taxes from 12% to 16%, with the new 4% dedicated to the fund created under the bill. Any estimates with respect to revenues produced by this are very soft, because we suspect the behavior of many of the delinquent taxpayers will change with the higher interest rate, thus improving the cash flow to local taxing districts, but creating diminished amount of delinquent taxes. The result, the attempt that this bill makes to provide additional stability is a mechanism called floor and subfloor. The floor is if the Department of Revenue estimates that revenue produced from this source will be less than $10 million in a year, the interest rate on the first 12% delinquent taxes will be used to ensure that at least $10 million flows to the fund. That's the floor. the subfloor is that this is limited, the access to this money is limited to $3 million. That is what we call the subfloor. So there will be some stability. We don't know how much, but certainly some stability. There's a mechanism for stability on this, this part of the revenue source. The other new revenue source is an assessor's processing fee of $20, which is a flat fee.
Gil, before you move to the next subject, so when you say that it will produce $12 million after a three-year transition period, are you talking about $4 million a year because of the increased interest rate?
No, Madam Chair, the $12 million is an estimate from the Department of Revenue of the annual flow of these dollars. This increased interest rate under the department's estimate will produce $12 million a year.
$12 million a year?
Mm-hmm.
Not $12 million after 3 years, period.
$12 million a year after a three-year transition period. In other words, the flow will be somewhat less during the first 3 years because the additional interest rate will apply beginning July 1 of this year forward. And so there'll be less of delinquent taxes subject to the new interest rate, as there'll be more delinquent taxes subject to the new interest rate, then the flow will increase, and the department estimates it will result ultimately in about $12 million a year. Again, this is a very soft estimate because it depends on taxpayers maintaining current behavior. The department is discovering in its somewhat modest survey that at least with respect to delinquent property tax accounts of 75,000 or less, that a substantial minority of delinquent property taxpayers do not live in the home, they're rental properties. So we can assume that a good share of those people are choosing not to pay property taxes on time. It's not an issue of not being able to, but rather they're choosing not to. And their behavior may indeed change once the interest rate raises. 16%.
I'm sorry, that percentage again estimated that prefer not to pay was?
Representative Hanneman.
Madam Chair, Representative Hanneman, I'm not sure how definite the department. I'd rather the department speak to that, but I think a substantial minority is as close as I can come to.
Gil, what do you anticipate the first 3 year during transition the revenue would be from this increasing tax rate?
Madam Chair, I should have Jim Kenny from the department join me. He's the one who worked up the figures initially, if that's all right with you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jim Kenny representing Department of Revenue.
Jim, can you answer the question we just raised here?
Would you repeat the question for me, please?
The question is, what do you expect the increase in revenue to be from the increase in the interest rate on delinquent accounts?
As Gil was mentioning, we imagine that it will be ultimately approximately $12 million per year, but as it's phased in, the first biennium, we are estimating about $9 million for the first biennium, and then in the next two bienniums, it will increase each first year, excuse me, and then in the next 2 years, it will be increasing up to about, I believe it was 10 and a half in the second year, and then we estimate it'll be between 11 and a half to 12 in the third year. So we feel that by the third year, we will reach approximately the maximum of $12 million a year.
Mm-hmm. So you estimate about $9 million the first year, $10.5 million the second year, and $11.5 million from the third year.
Right.
What is the average number of accounts who are delinquent?
I don't have exactly the average number of accounts that are delinquent in each county. The total amount of delinquent taxes for the last fiscal year, I believe, was somewhere around $70
million. $70 million?
income from the 12% interest rate on delinquent account?
No, Senator, Madam Chair. The interest that is generated is about $40 million.
Per year?
Per year, mm-hmm. At 12%.
At 12%. But you don't know what is the average number of accounts which are delinquent?
For Multnomah County, we have the number of accounts. I think I might be able to find that in just a minute, the accounts in the state. Mm-hmm. I think I have that information.
Well, in the meantime, why don't you continue okay. with your testimony?
I'm sure. The other new revenue source is an assessor's processing fee, a flat $20 fee, which will be paid upon filing of documents that convey ownership and real property. This is based on cost to county assessors to process changes of ownership, and which is about $24, we estimate, per change. The estimated revenue from this source should be around $4 million a year based on current real estate activity, 5% of which, or $1 of each $20, will be retained by the counties for administrative costs. The counties collect on both of these revenue sources, do the collections.
Do you charge any fees at all for this, for the documents?
There is, under current statutes, there's a filing fee paid to the county clerk of, I believe, $10 for documents of this type, and maybe additional $5 per additional page. And in 1985, there was created a fee for corner preservation activities of the county surveyors, which is set by county ordinance and can be up to $10, or more than $10 per filing.
So the $20 fee means an increase of $10.
$20 fee means an increase of $20 in addition to it would be an additional fee, this $20 here, but this money would go to the fund created under the bill. Mm-hmm.
So when people come in and register change of ownership, they pay 30 instead of 10.
Yes, unless there is a that's right. If there's not a corner restoration fee in addition, that would be the amount they pay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so if there's corner registration, then there's another $10.
Could be up to $10. Some counties don't have a fee for corner preservation. Other counties have a lesser amount.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Senator Hamby.
I apologize. Perhaps I should know this already. Currently, the situation is what? Are these dollars currently being retained by the counties, or are they forwarded to the state now?
Madam Chair, Senator Hamby. The base filing fee for the county clerk to process the documents is retained by the county for that function. The corner preservation funds are special accounts within the county. That money is dedicated to finding and setting corners so mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. on which all properties are based. This amount will go to the state. And 95% of this amount will
and
go to
currently
the state.
Where is the corner? Did you say? Where is it kept? At the county level?
At the county level, yes, in a separate account. It's dedicated for surveyors' activities on preserving corners.
So currently, then, the counties are able to retain all this to cover their costs mm-hmm. and...
Madam Chair, Senator Hamby, I may have confused you. The assessor's processing fee is a new fee created in mm-hmm. the bill, mm-hmm. the fee that we're talking about.
Right.
The other two that I've referred to are retained by the county.
Are retained and the dollars are retained.
Yes.
Okay. Go back, if you would, to the current 12%. Mm-hmm. How is that distributed now?
Oh, that's right.
Are they all
yes,
counted?
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Hamby, goes into the unsegregated tax account and is distributed to the local taxing districts under that formula.
Mm-hmm.
along with the regular taxes, there, those paid on time.
So it goes to revenue department?
No, those goes to the schools, the cities, counties, special districts in the area that have levying authority and have levy. This would be the only, this segment, the extra, the newly created additional 4% for on delinquent taxes will go to the state. The rest
will go to the
stays
state the way it is. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, so at the present time, nothing goes to the state, not the delinquent tax interest rate, nor the document, the deed registration fees.
Madam Chair, that's correct. Mm-hmm. The their delinquent property taxes based on non-payment of local property taxes. So that money stays locally.
Stays locally. And I know I'm jumping ahead, but now, for instance, in a growing county that has numerous documents filed, let's assume for a moment, versus a county that is not experiencing growth, and I know I'm jumping ahead to the method of distribution, but is there a, does the distribution take into account the changes of the filing of documents when the dollars are returned once again, or no?
Madam Chair, Senator Hamby, the reason why the bill adopts the concept of a state fund is so the distribution can be made in what's seen as the most equitable fashion. The dollars will not necessarily be returned to the county at the exact level that mm-hmm. county produced them, mm-hmm. but would be returned based on the assessment and taxation budget, that is the needs in that county to perform the functions.
So of the 10 counties that currently are in compliance would be losers?
Madam Chair, Senator Hamby, not necessarily. The money is distributed to all counties that mm-hmm. have adopted, that have a preliminary assessment taxation budget approved by the Department of Revenue. Mm-hmm. Dollars would go to every one of those counties, mm-hmm. whether that county is in compliance or not.
Or not. Okay. All right. I apologize for jumping ahead.
Madam Chair,
please continue.
Okay, method of distribution, and this will resolve, I think, some questions. The new revenue would be collected by the counties and transferred quarterly to the state fund administered by the Department of Revenue. At the end of each calendar quarter, the department will distribute up to, or at least, 90% of the fund.
Now, that's even during the first three transition years? Okay. Forgive me.
Up to 10% of the fund will be retained by the Department of Revenue for administrative expenses and to pay for appraisals of industrial properties of all types between $1 million and $5 million. This is the this is a new duty it will assume and will be covered by the revenue generated. The Department of Revenue, by administrative rule, will define the elements of assessment and taxation budget that's needed to maintain the requirement, the six-year reappraisal requirement for properties. Each county by February 1st of each year will submit its preliminary assessment and taxation budget to the department. After conferring with the county, the department can adjust the budget for purposes of sharing in the state fund to reflect the county's assessment and taxation needs. There'll be a conference to settle any disagreements by April 30th, and there's an appeal to the director of the Department of, to the State Executive Department, if that's necessary.
So, Madam Chair, if I were a county commissioner and I needed dollars in some other line, you know, some other division at the county level, let's assume mental health, I need something there, rather, and I purposely, again, cut severely the assessor's budget, is there going to be any penalty or any monitoring by the Department of Revenue to ensure that this does not happen, that the... Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Hamby, there indeed is. In mm-hmm. fact, the budget, the adjustment that the department can make to the preliminary assessment taxation budget includes increasing the amount. If the county has not provided for sufficient staff or resources, the department can say, you will not share, you'll not get a share in the fund unless you do. If a county is out of compliance with the six-year cycle and cannot provide its share of assessment and taxation needs, it must have a plan approved by the Department of Revenue to regain compliance. If not, it cannot share in the fund, the state fund. The total revenues for distribution in the state fund are divided by the total approved assessment and taxation budgets of all counties that qualify for a share of the fund. In other words, a percentage will be derived from the example I use it here, which is probably going to be fairly realistic. If the approved preliminary budgets statewide for each of the counties is $46 million for assessment and taxation, and the amount in the fund is estimated to be $14 million that year, the department, the fund will provide 30% of each of the county's assessment and taxation budget. That's assuming that the county has complied with the requirements, has a plan to maintain or get into compliance with a six-year requirement, and provides a budget that will do that. What counties, in exchange for this, what counties have agreed to is vastly increased compliance provisions. What has been termed as a compliance hammer, the House Revenue Committee, a couple of members refer to it now as an atomic bomb under this bill. To begin with, the Department of Revenue will have its own six-year cycle. It will be required to review each county's assessment and taxation operation at least once every 6 years. Secondly, if a county is out of compliance with the six-year cycle and either does not have a plan approved by the Department of Revenue to regain compliance or is not obeying a plan that it has entered into, then the department will issue recommendations and give a 30-day warning. If the county does not take appropriate action, the department can withhold the county's non-dedicated state-shared revenues across the board to the extent required to cure the deficiencies. And if the department needs to take more than what is currently budgeted in assessment taxation, it can do that the succeeding year. So money will be available to the department to cure the deficiencies. In addition, current law provides a one-month period that the department can institute action against the county. This bill opens it up year-round. Action can be begun by the department at any time.
Well, under current law, there's only 30 days out of the year the department can withhold revenue sharing money.
When action can be instituted, it can be done only between January 1st and February 1st.
That's the time when revenue department can withhold revenue sharing funds. Is this correct?
Madam Chair, that's the
Jim, period. Will you identify yourself again, please?
Jim Kenney, Department of Revenue. That's the time period that we can present to the county that they are out of